Thank you. Be seated.
Court is pleased to welcome Judge Spector from San Antonio here, who will be joining this court next month. We ask that counsel still direct their arguments to the bench in front of them. And we are now ready to hear argument from petitioners in the interest of JWT.
May it please the court, Mr. A.W. Davis will present arguments for petitioners.
May it please the court. As you've been told, my name is A.W. Davis, and I practice law in Newton County and live there. I represent Mr. and Mrs. Tompkins in this case. They are the parents of JWT. This is an appeal from the Beaumont Court of Appeals, where they reversed and remanded this case to the trial court. The trial court in this case was Judicial District 1A, Judge Monty Lawless presiding. Gibson originally filed this case in the Newton County District Clerk to establish paternity of the petitioner's baby. The petitioner Tompkins had been married for many years and they had other children. They had had marital problems and were separated for about 5 months. During that 5 months, Mrs. Tompkins resided part of the time with Gibson's.
There's really no dispute that Gibson is the biological father here, is there?
Not in my mind, Judge. No, not in my mind. After she gave birth to the baby, well, actually right before she gave birth to the baby, he filed a suit to seeking paternity. I came into the case and filed a motion, a plea and abatement, which the trial judge granted based on the fact that Mr. Gibson did not have standing under the family code to bring this suit.
Is this case a little unusual? Well, it is, maybe perhaps for several reasons, but for one, for the reason that there, we do have paternity testing that's occurred. To this point, as Judge Doggett says, we know 99.41% likely that Mr. Gibson's the father.
I mean, yes, it's certainly unusual in that sense.
And what weight should we give that?
Well, I think that bottom line, as they say in the matter, Judge, is whether the public policy of this state or whether biology and science are going to control the answer to this question. That appears to me to be what the bottom line is in this matter.
Whether public policy should just ignore scientific reality.
Well, of course, I feel like public policy should continue to be what it is in this particular case and not ignore it always, Judge, but under certain circumstances. This happens now.
If Judy changes her mind, is there anything to keep her from deciding to come along and file a paternity action against Larry?
No, I don't think that there is.
Anything to keep the state under LeVan from coming in and seeking child support from Larry?
Not under the van, I don't think there is.
Well, except that under LeVan, under Section 12.06, it requires an express statement denying paternity of one or both of the spouses. And in here, both spouses, neither spouse has made such an express written statement, have they?
Well, in fact, Mr. Tompkins contends to this day that he's the biological father of the child. That's his position in the claim.
He probably believes that too.
Possibly. I'm sure that the court is aware of a recent case that's come down from Waco that pretty much goes along with the Beaumont court in regard to the way they viewed this thing. It's Marvin Henderson versus Karen Lou Wachowski. It was written the latter part of October, and Chief Justice Thomas wrote a dissenting opinion that of course, I dearly love, to be quite frank with you, and I recommend to you highly. It's well thought out and a very good opinion. If you have read it already, it was not in the briefs, of course, and if you've read it already, well forgive me, because some of the things I'm going to tell you are from Judge Thomas's opinion, and I'm going to quote directly from it just a little bit if you'll allow me to do that. The circumstances in that case were pretty much the same as they were in this one, as I understand the case. Section 1103, as we know of the Family Code, prohibits a man who claims to be the biological father of a child with a presumed father from bringing a suit to establish his parentage. In this case before you, the Ninth Court ignored the test in the Michael case that was mentioned earlier and, of course, is referred to time after time in my brief and the opposing counsel's brief, and I know the court is quite familiar with it. The Ninth Court ignored that, ignored the whole case as a practical matter, even though it was directly on point.
Well, is it really directly on point? Doesn't it deal with a different statute that has a California statute has a kind of safety valve in it that seemed to be the thing that Justice Stevens concurred on?
Are you thinking about talking about the time element?
Right.
I think, in my mind, the Michael case is again directly on point. There is that difference, and I acknowledge that difference, but I think it's just like this case in that it gets down finally, time or no time, it gets down finally to a matter of public policy versus an individual's rights. And I think that's what they were talking about throughout the Michael case, that the California statute, except for that one item, is almost identical to ours. It's certainly identical to it as far as result is concerned.
Well, the California statute's got discretion to grant visitation rights.
Yes,
that we don't have.
Yes, that's true.
And so, and isn't that a factor that Justice Stevens thought was important in his concurrence?
Yes, he thought that was important.
So Happen really urged that Michael H. is controlling on the federal claim here, much less the state claim.
Well, I think that it is controlling because that what Justice Stevens had to say in that regard did not keep him from agreeing with the majority in regard to the case, and I think it still has the same effect.
Why isn't the decision of your neighbors across the river there in Louisiana really more apropos here in that NRA BGS case?
I'm not familiar with the case, Judge. When Judge Thomas talks about the Beaumont Court's opinion and he talks about the Michael case and the opinion that the Waco Court reached, he points out that just as we've been talking, that California and the Texas statutes are very close in meaning, and that the idea that Judge Walker came up with in the Ninth Court opinion, that the biological father has some right that's so rooted in traditions and conscience of our people as to be ranked as fundamental, is ridiculous. The public policy, of course, has always protected the family unit, and that's not a family unit that consists of a paramour and a wife and a child. Judge Thomas points out to us that Texas is now the only state ever to have a court declare that our society has traditionally protected the adulterous biological father's right to establish his parenthood and obtain parental rights. and degradation of the right of a marital family to protect its offspring from claims of illegitimacy by outsiders. Certainly the Supreme Court could find no such authority or tradition. Not surprisingly, the Beaumont Court offered not a whit of authority to support its view of our society's historical preferences.
Some would suggest it's just been we've had a change in the accuracy of our ability to demonstrate paternity, which should give rise to a change in public policy. Would you address that issue?
Yes. We have the ability, from a scientific standpoint, to do a number of things that are not in the best interest of society to do. Maybe a poor example would be to start a war or engage in a war that would destroy us. We have that ability scientifically. And just because we have the ability to determine without any doubt who the biological father of a child is, I don't think puts us in the position to say that's the thing we ought to do. That's the thing that will benefit society the most. Just because we can manufacture a car that will run 500 miles an hour doesn't mean that we should do that. That analogy is probably a little weak, but I'm very sincere about it. I don't know, where this is all going to lead. It's a close question and a hard question for all of us. I've often wondered, for instance, in this same vein, Judge, what kind of a situation you would get into if they came up with a truth serum that really worked. Would we all want to use it? Should we use it?
Is there value to the truth?
Sure, there's value to the truth. I don't believe that the truth should always necessarily be told, depending on the circumstances and depending on the audience. I think that the legislature, whose job it is, or who's taken the job on in this instance to set public policy in Texas, has set the correct one. Our society is not going to be served by a rapist or somebody else coming in from out of the past or out of the present and saying, I'm the father of this child, and disrupting the family unit and causing all the unmitigated hardship and heartache that such a claim would cause.
Well, if he is the biological father of the child, has not the family unit already been interrupted through adultery?
Yes, Judge, to some extent. There's no question about that, to some extent. But again, as I've pointed out in my brief in contradicting Judge Walker, different people have different capacities for dealing with these things. Perhaps this family unit, and it would appear that way from the facts, is able to overcome this problem. I would put to you that there's probably not a family in Texas that has not had some serious breaches of the family unity. Maybe not this kind of a breach, certainly not, but some serious problems. And I think it speaks well of these people that they're able to put this behind them and go on. And of course, the real bottom line question is what's going to be the best for this child. And I submit to you that following Texas public policy of the presumption is what's going to be best for this child and for most children under most circumstances.
If under ordinary circumstances and other things being equal, it's probably sound public policy to pursue the structure and preservation of a traditional family unit. But should we pursue that policy to the extent that it totally denies reality, as in the other case where it could well deny the child the right to establish biological parenthood and obtain support from a biological parent that is capable of providing that support? or a biological parent from establishing some type of meaningful relationship with his offspring, and paying the price of parenthood through providing support and maintenance for that child, even though he can't participate as a member of the regular family unit. Yes, it's disruptive of the traditional family unit, but we also live in a real world where, in some circumstances, traditional family units don't exist.
May I respond?
Sure, please.
Certainly that's true, Judge, but every case, as in every other case we deal with, has to be dealt with on its own circumstances and in regard to its own facts. And that's what I think the courts need to continue to have the opportunity to do. And in this situation, that's going to be the thing that will bring about the best interest of society and this family unit and the child involved, which of course is the most important thing.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, the petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Tom Oxford will now present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. I believe the basic issue before the court today is whether men, fathers, have the same fundamental right relationship with their children that mothers do. The Texas Family Code, as it's presently drafted, makes a distinction between mothers and fathers when it comes to those rights.
To answer that question, yes, we'd have to find Section 11.03 of the Family Code unconstitutional. Right?
That is correct, Your Honor. As it's set out now, a certain class of fathers are absolutely prohibited from bringing their own action to establish paternity.
So you concede that you are not entitled to prevail unless we find the Family
Code
unconstitutional?
In my opinion, although other attorneys, I believe, disagree with me, in my opinion, the Family Code is fairly clear. And from a statutory basis, we cannot establish paternity unless either the mother or the stepfather consents or they divorce and accept reality at that point.
And doesn't that require our declaring 11.03A7, 1206A, 1301A, all three provisions to be unconstitutional?
I believe if the court holds in my client's behalf, that all of those will have to be revisited by the legislature. A whole new system of presumptions will have to be taken upon by them. There's a lot of talk about, and I heard Mr. Davis in his last comment mention looking at each case on its own circumstances, on its own facts. And that's really what we're asking the court today to allow Judge Lawless in Newton County to do. These cases, these fathers should not be prohibited just because of the status, the marital status of the mother from establishing a relationship with their child. The trial court needs to have the opportunity to look at each case in its own individual circumstances.
How do you answer the argument that this doesn't have anything to do with sex discrimination, that it has to do with marital status as a basis?
Well, I disagree with the Jack v. Jack opinion that held exactly that out of the Dallas Court of Appeals. It's only fathers who have to pass the test of the marital status of the other parent. Only fathers face that test. It's true that that test looks at the marital status of the other parent, but it's only fathers that have to face that. Mothers do not have to face the question of what is the marital status of the father of the child. They always have a right to a relationship with their child. Only fathers have this test, this burden they have to come over, they have to cross. And although the Beaumont Court of Appeals did not visit that because they found on the due process argument, the recent decision out of Waco did, and I believe correctly decides the question of whether there is sex discrimination involved here. There clearly is a distinction based on sex in the Family Code, which gets to the equal rights argument that my client has brought before this court. That argument was not visited by the United States Supreme Court in the Michael H. decision. First off, because unfortunately in the United States we don't have an equal rights amendment to the United States Constitution. I'm proud as a Texan that we do have that in Texas. Therefore, the United States Supreme Court in the Michael H. case never had an opportunity to review the sexual discrimination issue. that should have been before them. The real question before the court, I think, under either the equal protection or the due process, which is the primary focus of my arguments this morning, because in all honesty, I believe that is the strongest argument for my client. The primary question before the court is whether these statutes serve any type of compelling state interest. I don't think they do. I think they actually do serve certain compelling state interest.
Of course, Mr. Oxford, if you're right, then in this case, we've already got testing that shows where paternity. But this case, if you should prevail, would also apply to those instances where someone merely seeks to prove paternity and perhaps ultimately is not established by DNA testing or blood testing or the like. So the same rule would apply across the board, would it not?
That's correct. I can't come in and ask the court to pass a statute that will cover all the various possibilities that may be opened by the ruling in this. I think the legislature will have to visit this issue and have to make some reasonable distinctions that do not trample, first off, on the rights of fathers to have equal rights.
Well, for one thing, Your Honor, I think father has
he certainly can assert it, and father can assert it today. They just can't assert it in court. They can assert it at home. And believe me, it's going to be asserted, and that's going to impact a marital relationship, whatever the court does today. The question will be answered fairly quickly with blood test taken. There's not going to have to be a lot of argument. We don't have the same concerns that we've had in the past about our inability to make a real determination to be a father. With today's status, paternity testing, DNA testing, well, I can't say that anything can be proved beyond any doubt. Certainly we can establish paternity beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's going to take care of those issues. Truly, I think one of the bases of the statute that was set out today was to avoid the impact of false claims of marital infidelity, false claims of paternity on a good solid marriage. That is a state interest that may have been served prior to our ability to throw out those false claims with easy, fairly inexpensive blood tests. We don't have to worry about that problem of false claims anymore. Anybody that makes false claims will fairly soon learn that those claims are going to be dealt with forthright, the blood test, and they'll be out of there, and the marriage will be, I think, stronger for it.
Stronger
for the fact that, as the situation sets right now, blood test really shouldn't have been ordered by the trial court. If no blood test is taken, you're going to be left with folks in the community simply, I'm the daddy, no, focus. There's always going to be some instability, some question in that marriage. If the blood tests are taken, that issue is dealt with, it's over with, and the parties can move on.
When a woman is raped, although it is no fault of her own whatsoever, in a high percentage of the case it results in divorce simply because of the inability of one spouse to deal with that fact, i.e. the husband. Now, if an allegation is brought by a third party that the child is his, that is going to place a tremendous burden on that marriage. It will be publicly known, the lawsuit will be widely discussed, and would not that encourage and possibly bring about additional increases in the number of divorces?
Your Honor, I believe that the mere fact of the infidelity, if it in fact occurs, is the problem that the marriage will have to face. I don't believe that then somebody bringing a lawsuit subsequent to that is going to cause
but
any
if
more.
If there is no infidelity, eventually you're going to get around to the blood test. But by then the damage will be done. The allegations will be in the newspapers, their friends will know, and all this can be done by a sole person whose only purpose is to cause marital disharmony because he may have been rejected.
Well, certainly, Your Honor, that is an unfortunate result. I think that occurs already, even with the provisions as they're set forth now, because the real word gets out not through the newspapers. There's thousands of these that occur every day in every city. Not through court proceedings, but through family and friends talking. that's where that allegation gets out. That's where that allegation is spread around the community. I don't think that our acknowledging reality today and allowing a father to have a relationship with his child is going to change any of that. If the claim is false, the blood test will take care of it.
But will the blood test take care of the damage that's been done to the marriage?
No, sir. The parties to the marriage will have to deal with that themselves. I don't think that the state of Texas has any ability, whether we want to or not, to protect the integrity of a marriage. That is up to the two people, the two parties to the marriage. Those are the folks that are going to have to protect that integrity. We can't do that. It's just not possible for the state of Texas to do anything about that. That's up to the parties.
This issue of rape has now come up and was referenced by opposing counsel, and I guess it goes back to the rather peculiar hypothetical that Justice Scalia advanced in Michael H. How do you answer that hypothetical that this what you're asking for would give the rapist a right with regard to the child?
I think it's unfortunate that the Texas legislature has not allowed fathers such as my client an opportunity to have a relationship, and we have to have the court then face a possibility of throwing out all the presumptions and having a brief period where the Texas legislature has not had an opportunity to come back in and deal with problems such as that problem. If this is thrown out, then I can't honestly tell the court that a rapist couldn't try to come into court and say there's not a bar to my seeking a paternity action. I think the legislature needs to deal with that. I certainly don't think that somebody's criminal actions provide them with any type of particular civil rights. I'm not here to defend rapists, obviously. But the point is, and the point in general is that a father such as Mr. Gibson should not be barred, and there should not be an absolute bar against a father such as Mr. Gibson's. And the trial court, I'm sorry.
And before the legislature has any opportunity to deal with it, is would the fact, the reality of the rape be a consideration that a court could take, a trial court could take into consideration done outside the marriage, just as the trial court could take into consideration a rape committed during the marriage?
I believe so.
So in this case, if it were alleged that Mr. Gibson actually was a rapist, that factor would have to be tried and taken into consideration in the case also?
Certainly. I think the trial court should be taking all the facts into consideration.
And if this couple wants to thwart this claim, it would be to their benefit to allege life of consent.
Well, in this particular case, they've never made that allegation, and I would hope that somebody would not use that type of allegation to gain advantage in a civil case, no matter how important the results, but I can't tell you that people...
Even if it was their children and marriage at stake.
I can't tell you that people won't make false claims to the court and take advantage of whatever they can.
Amicus has argued that this would have a devastating effect on adopted children if... it were possible for biological fathers to force blood testing and to have themselves identified as the biological parent of a child that has been given up for adoption. Should we take that into account and consider the countervailing interests here?
Well, I disagree with the amicus position concerning adoption. Unless they're talking about adoptions in which they did not go to the father and either terminate his parental rights or get consent to the adoption. But certainly I think that fathers should be treated the same as mothers. And if the adoption agencies are arguing that they don't have to treat fathers the same as mothers, then I think there's a real problem. They need to revisit their approach to this situation.
Well, in many adoption cases, the father is merely identified by the mother as the possible father. And he signs an affidavit relinquishing any rights he may have. There's no requirement that the correct or the true biological father be identified, and he may never even have notice.
I think it's true that sometimes people will lie about things in court proceedings, including mothers lying about who the possible father is, or lying about the fact that there's more than one possible father. Once again, I don't think that can justify any situations occurring here.
There's no state interest in trying to prevent the disruption of adoptive families?
Actually, I think there is. And I think it's the same state interest that's being disserved by this statute. And that interest is in the stability of children and having a relationship with their parents, whether they be adoptive parents or biological parents. As the provisions are set forth right now, my client will at some point, I suspect, have an opportunity to have a relationship with his child. And more importantly, I think from this court's perspective, the child, which should be the focus of the family code, will have an opportunity to have a relationship with his father. Unfortunately, I don't know when that's going to occur, and that child may be 10, 15 years old before that occurs. This child is entitled to some stability. I think that certainly the legislature, and this is not for the court to decide, but the legislature needs to look seriously at the stability of the child if that's what they're trying to protect here. And we probably need some type of limitation period on whether it be the mother, the stepfather, or the biological father coming in and saying that I'm the father and bringing some type of action, because that child needs to have fairly early in life, needs to have stability, needs to have these issues settled. And I certainly hope that that occurs. The way it's set forth right now, that issue is not settled. In the great number of cases in which children are conceived while the marriage is still, at least legally, in existence, it could be years before Mr. Gibson is given the opportunity to develop a relationship with the child. There are some step-parents that are just as good a parent as any biological father or mother you've ever met. However, I don't think that's the rule. As a general rule, I think you'll find that step-parents don't have quite the same relationship with a stepchild as they do with their own biological children, despite their best efforts, despite their desires to have that.
Why is it rational for the state to decide, though, that if in some circumstances you are not entitled to the same relationship that you might be entitled to in other circumstances?
I'm not sure I understood the question.
A rapist might not be entitled to the same relationship with a child, but neither might an interloper. If a child is conceived in those circumstances, you're just on notice you might not be entitled to the same rights in that child as you would in a married situation.
I think that trial court's hands should not be tied, and they should be able to look at each individual circumstance. And as the U.S. Supreme Court said in the Stanley case, we shouldn't make these rulings by presumptions. We shouldn't just presume away things and ignore the facts and ignore the realities. I think that the circumstances of both the mother and the father should be taken into account by a trial court in every case. It's just my point is the legislature should not tie the trial court's hand. The trial court should be able to look at those circumstances. They should be able to look at a situation like Mr. Gibson's in which there was a family there. It may not have been a traditional family in one sense, but in a very real sense in Texas, it was a very common type of family in which you had a man and a woman in love, engaged to be married, conceived a child. She was in the process of divorcing her husband. I'm happy for her that she rediscovered her love for her husband and returned to him. But for a period there, for several months, Ms. Tompkins and Mr. Gibson had a family, and they conceived a child in that family. And there's no reason that we should throw him out along with the bad eggs that we're worried about today, the rapists, the interlopers, the situations like that. And that really gets to the due process question.
And I gather that you feel you can prevail under due process or under our state ERA, we could decide the case under one or either?
I believe that the provisions as they're set forth now violate both sections, and that we should prevail on both. Yes, sir.
As far as due process is concerned, have you reviewed this NRA BGS case over in Louisiana?
Out of Louisiana, I really am not that familiar with that case as well. I was told about it. I understand that they allowed some relationship, but
do you contend that Larry's liberty interest arises out of the fact that he is the biological father, or his display of willingness to accept responsibility for the child?
Well, I understand that most courts, including the United States Supreme Court, most of the judges in the Michael H. case, focused on the efforts of the father after the child was born to develop a relationship and found that important. And I certainly don't disagree that is important when you look at anybody, whether it be a biological father or whether it be a stepfather, like the case out of San Antonio, TWE versus KME. I'm not sure if the court is familiar with that. It's a fairly recent case that found some rights for stepfathers because of their relationship with the child. The site on that is 828 Southwest 2nd 806. That should not be ignored. However, I don't think that a father's right to relationship with his child should depend totally upon the willingness of the mother of the child to let him have a relationship. Mr. Gibson set forth, he did what he could when he could do it until he was barred because of the situation of the mother returning to try to develop a relationship. The reason that I did not bring this case in United States constitutional grounds is because, reading their opinion, they seemed to focus on what happened after the child was born. By that time, my client had been pushed out of the picture. I'm sure that the mother was desperate to save her marriage and hopefully has. I don't know whether the stepfather, why he hasn't allowed this man to have a relationship with his child. I can't guess on that. But he did what he could when he could do it. And
so
I think that...
relying exclusively on the biological link?
Well, there's more than a biological link here. They were together. They were engaged to be married. He was paying some medical bills, some prenatal care bills for the child. But I can't ignore the reality, which is before the child was born, he was pushed out of the child's life. And that's one of the real problems. This child, I meant to check the birth date. I don't know how old this child is right now, but the child's growing up while we're trying to get him some rights. That's exactly the problem with the statute. The father's in a situation like Mr. Gibson's. This child grows up before something happens that allows them to get a relationship with the child. And they miss a lot of that bonding and things that occur very early in the child's life.
Aren't trial courts across the state, if you're right, court holds in your client's favor, going to be adjudicating visitation, child support payment, the obligations as between not only the married husband and wife, but as regards a third-party biological father and perhaps grandparents as well?
Well, I don't think that the grandparents or step-parents have any obligation of child support under the family code.
Well, that's correct. But it's visitation. They have visitation rights if they choose.
Visitation, that is correct, Your Honor. Yes, sir.
So the trial courts across the state are going to have to sort it out as between all those folks, the husband and wife, the, I guess, presumably divorced husband and wife, the biological father, grandparents.
I think in appropriate circumstances, when it's in the child's best interest, and when the court is allowed to get to the question of whether it's in the child's best interest, they may have a number of parties that have visitation rights, grandparents with grandparent access. If the San Antonio case is good law, then step-parents may have some visitation rights. They certainly have some argument of custody rights in some circumstances.
Well, that San Antonio case relied strictly upon the fact that the child had been in the custody of the stepfather for more than 6 months.
That's correct. But my understanding of their definition of custody of the stepfather, and I could be incorrect about that, was they meant custody of him and the wife while they were together. And I could be incorrect, but that was my understanding of the facts on that case.
If the trial courts are to weigh these considerations, if a trial court in this case found that allowing Mr. Gibson access would destroy this marriage, is that a factor to be considered or not?
I think that the trial court should look at the child and not the marriage.
And would also hurt the child.
I think if it would also hurt the child, that is legitimately something that the trial court should be able to look at.
Any other questions?
Here, was there actually an effort by Larry to pay child support?
Judge, he, in the action that he brought, a necessary part of that was that he was not asking for custody. He was asking for visitation rights and offering to pay support. I honestly don't know whether Mr. Gibson has actually ever tried to send them money. But as a part of this proceeding, he was standing ready and willing to support his child and simply asked to have a relationship with that child.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Please, the court, I realize this isn't jury argument, but I must speak to this matter about what Mr. Gibson did or didn't do. There's a lot of dispute about that, needless to say. Counsel sees it one way, I see it in an entirely different light. For instance, and this is a matter of the record before you, this case was filed originally pretty promptly after my client left and returned to her husband. That could be interpreted in a number of ways. Obviously, he interprets it one way. I interpret that action another way. Quite frankly, to end on a rather personal note, the thing that bothers me the most, quite frankly, other than my clients and their benefit, is the adoption aspect of this thing, because my wife and I are the parents of several adopted children and have adopted grandchildren, and quite frankly, that just scares me to death. And I don't know what the answer to this is, just like counsel here doesn't know what it is either. And you have my deepest sympathy in trying to work it out. But I submit to you very respectfully that the policy of the state of Texas is set up by the legislature that's shown to us by this provision in the Family Code about the presumption has served us very well up until this point. It served us very well. Not to say, as with everything else, there weren't times when it didn't, but for the most part, it served society well. There's no good reason, no good compelling reason to change that policy at this point, either by judicial decree or otherwise. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Thank you, Counsel. That concludes the argument and the second clause. The court will now take another brief recess.
The audience, please rise.